And there we go. You know the music. You know the drill. It's time for another enlightening episode of Crazy Comics and Stories. On this side of the phone, it's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the interwebs is Joe Crazy Rider. How you doing tonight, Joe?
I'm doing great. Everything's all set up. We had a real fun weekend. We were at the con. My daughter's making vegetarian nachos. Holly's here. Did you have a fun time at the con? We got to say yes. We're on
podcast. Yes.
What did you do when you were at the con?
I got some art and I worked at the charity auction.
Cool. You talked to Terrence Greep for about an hour. What did you guys talk about?
We talked about kind of books that we like and more about his wrestling.
Cool. That was our run-in for the show.
There we go. We had a run-in.
Figure get that over with. My other daughter, Dana, was at the con as well, and she took oodles of pictures, which I will be posting on our Facebook page, which, if I can remember what it's called. What's it called?
The Facebook page?
Yeah, hang on.
I believe it is the Crazy Comics and Stories fan page.
Yep. Not to be confused with our website, which is
crazycomics.solitairerose.com, part of the Solitaire Rose family of websites.
Which is also where you can click into your web strip, which is
www.worldwidenews.solitairerose.com. And before we get into the ad, what are all those noises over at your house? It sounds like the place is falling apart.
Well, my desktop computer isn't working, so I had to set the laptop up in the kitchen. So basically, my family's eating.
Oh, okay.
So we'll just work through it.
Sounds like you've lost your mind over there.
Well, it's been noted.
Thrown glasses being broken.
Oh, here it is, the official Crazy Comics and Stuff podcast page. And I'm pretty sure if you just searched Crazy Comics, you'd find us.
And our sponsor, this year radio show has a sponsor, Worldwide News, a web strip updated twice a week by me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and Dainty Dan Moore. On today's strip, we actually have a 2001 Space Odyssey joke. After having Transformers jokes, Godfather jokes, it's a poetry of pop culture references and monkeys. So as I take the $20 bill from one pocket.
I would have guessed been in $1 bills by now, but maybe we're breaking it into quarters.
Please visit our sponsor.
And don't forget, Saturday, October 16th, will be the Fall Con comic book party put on by the Midwest Comic Book Association. Yes, I know Spring Con's over with, but it's never too early to get ready for the one-day wonder. Again, at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds Progress Center. We'll talk more about that as we get closer to October.
So we're done advertising Spring Con. Now we're into Fall Con.
Yes.
It's like the circle of life.
Exactly.
So, we had a number of our listeners come up and say hello to us, which I appreciated.
To you, anyways. They didn't know who I was.
I would point you out, and then they would look at you and hide.
Very wise.
But it was nice to meet the listeners. Nice to meet people that, you know, I either just know on the internet or people I've met once or twice or people who've emailed me. It's always nice to meet the fans. And it's weird for me to call them fans.
Did you link to your web strip on your Facebook?
I haven't done it yet today, and here's why. So Dan sends me, usually at about 11 o'clock at night, strip. He says, oh, I just got it done, and I've uploaded it. So look it over. And, you know, by 11 o'clock, I'm usually in bed. Or, you know, watching TV or reading comics or something. I'm not sitting at the computer at 11 o'clock. I'm not a nerd, a geek, a Poindexter who's up on the internets all night. So I get the email when I get up this morning and I have to run off work and I look at the email and there's no comic strip in it. So I go, oh, he probably uploaded it to the website and just forgot to send it to me. So I get to work and I'm up in the booth and everything's crazy and I can't check it until about, oh, I would say 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And it's the same strip as last Thursday. And I check my email and there's a little note. Corey, I uploaded the wrong strip. I uploaded the strip to my other strip, Everyday Gods, and uploaded the Worldwide News strip to the Everyday Gods site. So the strip didn't go up until I would say around 6 or so. The things I put up with.
Honestly.
Now, here's the thing. Dan is usually, you know, like I said, he usually gets it done because it's drawn by hand about an hour or two before it goes live. I am a year and a half ahead on writing the strips. So there are characters that I've created, that I've written stories about, that haven't even been introduced in the strip yet. So when people email me and, you know, ask a question about the strip, I have to think back to last year when I wrote it.
Stop it, Corey. I'm afraid. I found it without your help.
There you go.
You know what? We lost a listener again, at least on Crazy Comics Facebook page. We're down to 55 fans.
What did you do? You probably scared one of them off at the con.
I don't know. I think one person's just toying with us.
You know what I think it is? Off. I think people are getting tired of waiting, so we're going to stop everything right now. And we're going to ask, Joe, have you caught up on Amazing Spider-Man yet?
You know, in case you missed it, and I know you might have, there was a comic show last weekend. And I picked up a ton of stuff to read, believe it or not. And I've got, I haven't even got a chance to do everything here. And matter of fact, if you would vamp for me a moment, I got to go get my pile of books for you. Hold on a second. I'll be back, I promise.
So while he's talking about that, I'm caught up on Spider-Man, and I'll be honest, I really like the Lizard story. It's been a long time. They're building to it.
I was so excited when I got back from the comic
book. What? Oh, you're back.
I'm back. Okay.
Well, I won't talk anymore about it because I don't want to spoil it for you.
I picked up Night of the Bedbugs from Paul Fricke, and it's an all-ages book. And I basically had him autograph it to my daughters. Our good buddy and Terrence Greep, I picked up a copy of his Scooby-Doo 148, where he talks about sumo wrestling. And Corey, I know you're going to be shocked. Terrence Greep is a pro wrestler.
No!
Yes, not a lot of people know that, so it's kind of shocking.
Well, who in the world? I've been going to local wrestling events. I haven't seen a Terrence Greep anywhere.
Well, you just got to look closer. Under the how shall we say, spider baby makeup, you'll see him.
Wait. Are you saying Tommy Spider Baby Saturday is really Terrence Greep?
I didn't say nothing of the sort. You're assuming that.
I'm shocked, I tell you. Shocked!
You should be. I did get to meet up with a longtime friend, Peter Krause, and he was able to hook me up with a reverse negative variant cover of Irredeemable number 2, and of course got him to autograph it. That was nice, because they only limited those to 500 copies, and they're only available through a comic shop, which is the name of a comic store down in Florida. Last month's preview had a set of them for sale for like $160. needless to say, I passed. I also picked up from one of the MCBA volunteers and a longtime friend, Mike Forgotten, had a book he published under the Wildcats Books imprint, The Good, the Bad, and the Unknown. Basically, if you're into Pulp Fiction, not Pulp Fiction, Pulp Heroes, a little different. This is a book right up your alley. You should be able to pick it up on Amazon or Mike's on Facebook as well. Go direct. And from my old partner, Pat, I can't have a Comic-Con come by without buying something from Pat. He cut me a deal on Astonishing X-Men hardcovers, Volume 1 and 2, the Joss Whedon written, and I believe John Cassaday did the art. And it's the complete run, so I sit down and read that. And, of course, I did pick up Black Widow number 1, not because I plan to read it, but because it's got Scarlet on the cover.
Anyways,
that was just the stuff I picked up to read. Now, to listen, I picked up Doctor Who, The Dalek Conquest, presented by Nicholas Briggs. It's 2 CDs. And I've listened to little bits of, like, when they used to have books on tape. Remember going to a Chicago con, and Nick, the guy who runs the MCBA, had the Kingdom Come tapes going, and they were fabulous. If you've read Kingdom Come, I strongly urge you to seek out these tapes or CDs, whatever you can find them. It adds something to the story. And it was a lot of fun. So I got a whole new pile of stuff to read and go through. Needless to say, I know Corey was running around. Corey, what did you get at the con?
Nothing.
So, how could you spend all weekend at the con and not get anything?
Because you were running around and I was stuck at the charity table for most of it. And I'm still looking for a job. It's not a smart idea to spend money when your part-time job pays minimum wage and you're looking at your schedule and they've only got you on for 2 shifts a week.
Well, might I suggest you spend that $20 you keep putting back from pocket to pocket?
But then how will I pay for the ads on the podcast?
Well, I know of at least 2 people who'll be happy to see that gag die.
Well, before we go into more about the con,
sad news.
Sad news, everyone. Sad news.
Oh, no.
They've announced the fall schedule for pretty much every network. And here are the things that have been canceled that I will be missing.
The CW. I mean the entire network.
No. That's my network that's been canceled.
Oh, my network. Okay.
For ABC, I will be missing Better Off Ted, Flash Forward, Lost. I'll really be missing Lost. On CBS.
Now, didn't Lost wrap up?
Yes, Lost will be wrapping up.
At least it ended.
On CBS, Numbers has finally come to an end. Another one of their 50 bajillion crime shows. This one where they're using math to solve crimes. On Fox, we've lost 24.
24 what?
I'm going to ignore that and move on. And then finally over on NBC, Heroes is no more. And Law and Order, which I have yet to watch a single episode of, is ending with its 20th season.
So basically you got 20 years to catch up.
But, you know, with my OCD, if I started watching it and I liked it, I went, oh, well, now I have to see them all. Yeah. And I have to see all the spinoffs. And I have to hunt down the webisodes. Oh, yeah, and the Jay Leno show got canceled, but I don't think anybody noticed.
No.
Here's the thing about the Jay Leno show. About 2 months before it came out, our movie theater, the popcorn bags, were the Jay Leno show, starting at 10, 9 central. We still have the bags, and we're still using them, even though the show's been gone for months.
I have a bit of sad news myself.
Oh, no! More sad news?
Yeah. One of the things I used to do at the Fall Con... music just makes me want to touch cloth. I used to run around from my old shop. I had a WCW Heavyweight Championship belt. Unfortunately, it had the name Goldberg on it. I would have preferred Flair, hell, even Hogan. But
how about David Arquette?
That would have been awesome. I think I might make one of those and just put it on there. But what I do, I always look for something unique to do. I mean, signatures and comics were fine. I used to do head sketches before everybody else was doing head sketches. I put a bunch of them on, I think it's comicartfan.com. I put my entire head sketch collection on there if you ever want to look it up. Got some nice stuff, you know, Joe Linsner, Art Spiegelman, some really rare, including some people that aren't with us anymore. But what I decided when I got this belt, I thought of something different to do. What I do is I take a Polaroid camera, take a picture, and then I would have them autograph it. And I got guys like Murphy Anderson, I got James O'Barr from The Kroll, including all the local guys, Dan Juergens, Pete Krause, Paul Fricke, some of the smaller press guys. It was fun. It was unique. I got not only a picture of the person, I got them holding the belt. What was kind of cool is you'd see some of the older guys, they would put it around their waist like, you know, the old-time champions would do, and the younger guys would toss it over their shoulder the way like Stone Cold or The Rock would. And it was just a lot of fun. Alas, with the discontinuation of Polaroid and the unwise storage of all my Polaroid film in the garage over the winter, I have no more Polaroid film. And I'm not paying $50 a pop to buy it off of eBay. I did hear they are working to make Polaroid film. Someplace licensed it, but they have a problem. They were not able to secure the chemicals they used in the original process, so they're trying to recreate it on their own. But sadly, end of an era.
And it's just not the same if it's a digital. It just isn't the same because you don't have that photo book.
Nope, and you can't get them to autograph it. I mean, that's half the fun, too, is getting the autographs.
So. Yep. So, speaking of conventions, I thought we would do an episode about conventions.
Cool.
Because we're 20 minutes into this year podcast, and we might as well start talking about the theme.
Sure.
So, Joe, what was the first comic book convention you ever went to?
Mine was in Minneapolis, down in the, I think it was Hotel Leamington, which, of course, like most of the classic hotels from the 60s, no longer exists. Took the bus down there. My mom might have even driven me down there. I don't know. I lived in St. Paul, so it was a way to get down there. Bus was probably it. And I don't remember much of it. I remember seeing Chris Claremont. I think the biggest story I've got is at the time, CC Beck was actually there. And, you know, I was 11 years old, maybe 12, and I had a copy of Power of Shazam number one. And what I did was, you know, you just wait in line. I'm just standing there. I'm a 10-year-old kid just waiting. And everybody's, you know, blah, 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 talking about it. And all of a sudden he turned and looked right at me and goes, "What do you think of this?" And my brain went, because everybody's like, "He's talking to me." And I said, "I really like it." And he autographed it. And, you know, some years later when it occurred to me I might have sold that edition, I just went bug nuts and ripped everything apart. And I'm happy to say I still have that copy that he signed. And later on, I found out after he'd passed away through the Comic Buyer's Guide that that was how C.C. Beck was. He was very interested in people's opinion and what he had to say, and he probably was thrilled to see a 10-year-old kid sitting there with, you know, a Shazam comic, which he probably figured he'd never have a chance to draw again. And he was probably real interested in what I thought of it. You know, and I just love it. It led to a lifelong passion for at least Captain Marvel. I mean, I know we have to call him Shazam. Heck, I even picked up that whole Power of Shazam series, although I don't recall ever finished reading it. Maybe I'm better off that way.
Well, the first convention I went to was, I think it was 1979. It was in Chicago, and my parents actually bought me a plane ticket from Peoria to Chicago, and I stayed with my mother's uncle that weekend. And at the convention was Jim Shooter, Terry Gilliam, and a whole bunch of people I had no idea who they were. And I'll be honest, I went in and I was just completely overwhelmed. I'd never been in Chicago, never even thought about being in a city that big. Then, you know, going to this hotel where, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of other comic fans. I really just found the ballroom and kind of stayed there for all the panels, including where Terry Gilliam talked about making Monty Python's Life of Brian, which I was not allowed to see. But my uncle took me to it anyway and said, "You should not tell your mother that I took you to this movie." And then I flew home the next day. And, you know, at the time, I was just completely overwhelmed by it. I look back on it now, and the fact that my parents bought a plane ticket to and from and did all of that is kind of pretty amazing to me.
It's pretty amazing.
I think the only thing I bought was the Overstreet Price Guide. And it was the EC volume, you know, the one that had the EC characters on the cover and a big article on EC Comics. And I read that thing to death. And in it was an ad for the EC hardcover volumes that were going to come out. And after reading that and then finding a place, you know, I don't even know where I found it, but there was a place where you can mail away to get the 1970s reprints where they reprinted 12 issues.
Mm-hmm.
Mailed away for those, fell in love with them, and decided I must have the EC library. Then while I worked at Schindler's, because I was able to get it for cost, I bought pretty much every volume except the ones that had not come out yet. And I bought the last two volumes, which came out from you. Mm-hmm. The final volume was the EC Picto Fiction, which came out when you had the small store.
Okay.
And I was so glad because, you know, you were going to shut the store and it hadn't come out yet. And it was almost like a race. Please let this come out while I can still get it for cost.
I kind of remember that because I had a race like that when Christie was closing the store because I wanted a signed copy of the JLA Avengers crossover. And unfortunately, Christie closed before I got it. And I did end up getting it through the source, which was cool. But you know, for a while there, I was getting them all signed. I think I've only got one signed one left. Eventually, I brought them to the shop and just sold them on eBay. I'm that type of guy. I'll collect something and then I'll sell it all.
Yeah, you do that, don't you?
Yeah. I will. I do want to brag about a couple other things before we move on. It is mostly MCBA. As you know, Corey and I were working the charity art. Anyway, the charity store / rummage sale. And we have a lot of fun doing this because what's great about it is we get all this cool stuff and people come up and of course none of it is priced. And what's the first thing out of your mouth when you see something you want and it's not priced?
How much is that?
Well, I'll tell you what. This is what we tell people. 100% of the proceeds are going to charity. You tell me what it's worth. And if they look befuddled, I say, not that I'm trying to make you feel guilty to spend more just because it's for charity. But you'd get people up and down the line. Some guys would lowball you. Some guys would highball you. And most of the time, we would accept whatever they say.
Yeah.
There's very few items we got that had predetermined price. Like if someone gave us some artwork, they said, well, I would like this much for it to go to the charities, and we'd honor that request. But we just had a lot of fun, and you know, we brought in a lot of, I bought like 3 carloads of stuff, only returned with one. Very
which
little,
is a good thing.
Yes, yes. Very little was left over. Even at the art auction, I think they sold every piece that was donated except 4. And those 4 we got in storage, and we'll bring them out next year. I picked up 2 pieces. One of the local creators did a really cool David Tennant coming out of the TARDIS sketch, which I was able to win for Holly. And then our good buddy, Mark Segbauer, did an M. Zombie A. Con painted. It's like a sketch, and then he painted the zombie colors on there. And I went kind of nuts, got in a bidding war with Nick for it. But that was a lot of fun. The one piece I didn't get, and I usually score them every year, but Christopher Rich McKelvey does normally a beautiful sketch with Spring Con. He did a few with Fall Con on it. And this year he did one that was fully painted, and I did not win it, but I was able to go and get he had prints made up of this. So once I get my scanner operational, I'll make scans of all this stuff and link it on our website. And then, as most of you know, Sarah Douglas was there. She played Ursa from Superman 2. Charming guest. I do regret I did not get to see the panel because we were busy doing the Cherry Star, but I did go over and get a picture of her as Ursa and had her autograph it. She was charging the standard fee that, you know, most of the celebrities do. So I didn't mind doing that since I lost out on the other artwork.
Now, when she came by the store, I worked her pretty hard to buy the Ultimate Chopper.
Oh, that's great. That was like the one piece left over from last year, the Ultimate Chopper.
And she finally said, look, if I try to take that on the plane, they're going to lock me in Gitmo, so I'm going to have to pass.
And oh, that's too bad I wasn't in there, because I could have told her point blank, we would not. Oh, well. It doesn't matter, because I know it ended up in a good unemployed homeless home.
I'm not homeless yet.
Oh, sorry.
Now, the MCBA has been doing cons for 22 years.
Yeah.
Joe, what is the first MCBA con you went to?
I don't recall. I'm pretty sure I didn't go to the first one. I think I went to the second one, and this is where I wish one of the founders, Brian, he always corrects me because he knows, but I recall one over on the west bank of the University of Minnesota campus in what was then a Holiday Inn, kind of in not far from where Big Brain Comics is. And I remember going to that, but I think by the third con, they were doing various cons at VFW halls, and they kept moving around trying to find decent venues. Eventually, they settled on the Thunderbird Hotel, which is next to the Mall of America. And then the one-day con kept going from place to place. I think they went to Bandana Square. They tried the Thunderbird. It was just too nightmarish. Eventually, with the founding of Nick, they found a home when Nick came on board, they found a home in the Minnesota State Fairgrounds for good. But the one I remember that what happened was is my partner Pat and I, after going as dealers to the show, and I think we went by the third show, we went as, you know, weekend warrior type guys. We would just show up and do the con. And we decided that we thought that the MCBA needed, like, a retailer point of view in their planning. And so we talked to the guys, and they said, well, it's all volunteer. Feel free to come on board. So we came on board. and we worked with them. We told them what we thought retailer concerns were, and they said, well, here's some of the complaints that the retailers have. And a lot of times they were complaints that really not MCBA problems, you know. Oh, I didn't bring the right stuff to sell. My sales were down. You know, really the job of the MCBA, get the guests, get the venue, and get people in the door. And they've been increasing every year I've been working with them. It got to the point with finally another Pat came on board, and he got to the point where it's like, well, if I hear a retailer complain, I'm saying, guess what? I'll write you a check. You can head home. Oh, no. Oddly enough, the retailer complaints disappeared when Pat showed up. But for the most part, I came to the conclusion, being a retailer, that no matter what you give them, they're just not happy. Although, largely for the last 5 years, 6 years, I haven't heard real retailer complaints because the show is really kicking butt.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I talked to some of the retailers this year, and they said that people just weren't spending.
And we noticed that too at the charity booth. It was, you know, when you're saying you're going to give a guy a $40 action figure for $2, and he says no, you know something's wrong.
Yeah. But my first MCBA convention was actually the first one. I'd only been in Minnesota for a year, maybe, at most. And I remember when I first moved here, the first comic book shop I went to was the College of Comic Book Knowledge, because they were in the Overstreet Guide. And there was an employee there. And I started chatting with them, you know, asking about the comic business here in the Twin Cities, things like that. I hadn't found a, you know, I had found a job, but it wasn't a really good one. And, you know, I was about to get married and money was very tight. So we were just there to, you know, buy some stuff, get a few things, find out what's going on. I wasn't ready to become a subscriber or anything. But one of the employees there started chatting with me, asking me about, you know, what comics I bought, what I knew about comics. And finally he said, well, you know, we're trying to put on this convention, and I wonder if you would be willing to help us with that. And, you know, like I said, I'd been to three conventions. Two of them were the big Chicago ones, and one was the one that I flew to. So I thought conventions kind of magically happened. I had no idea that a normal, you know, just a comic fan could be involved in helping. And it would be like telling you, hey, do you want to write Spider-Man for a few months? Just, you know, just cause. So I went to the meetings and I got involved, and I was there at the first one at the VFW. And I was doing, I was doing security and admissions. And I've been involved with them ever since. There were a few years where I wasn't able to go because my full-time job made it hard to. Those were when I was the director of the group home, and I would go months without a day off. But I was at the very first one, and all I remember was that it was at a VFW, and the ceilings were just huge. You know, you would look up, and the ceiling was almost like two stories up.
Who were some of the guests that were there? Do you remember?
Just the local people. You know, it was
Phil Folio there at that one?
He might have been, but I mostly remember Dan Juergens, Peter Krause. Those are the two I remember, because, oh, and Gordon Purcell. Because Dan Juergens and Gordon Purcell were actually involved with creating the convention.
How many years were they there?
I think they did 2 one-days at that VFW.
You know, I may have been at that one. I don't recall. It's all blurry.
Well, you know, you got to remember, it's 22 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, this is...
We're getting old.
I don't want to do the math.
I'm not going to do the math. So this convention, you know, you talked about...
You were gone from the MCBA for a while. When did you come back? When did I mean, that's when I met you.
Well, in 1990... That's when my divorce started, and I was a single dad, and I was going through a divorce, and I was working two jobs, and something had to give. Because I remember I brought my son, who was not even 2 yet, to one of the meetings, at Annie's Parlor in Uptown, which isn't there anymore.
Nope. And after, I think that's where I met you, isn't it?
Might have been.
Because I mean, before that, it was always, well, if Corey was going to be here, he can take care of A, B, C, and D. We're waiting for Corey to show up. And then all of a sudden, Corey showed up. And I think we covered that in previous podcasts.
So. Yeah, and I had to leave after 20 minutes because my son would not stop crying.
But how old is he now?
21.
And he still hasn't stopped?
No, he's still crying.
Okay.
But this convention, you know, you've talked about some of the stuff you got. Oh, Joe, what is your favorite moment of this convention?
You know what? I'm going to bounce that one back to you because I got to think about that for a bit.
Okay. I always think back, you know, for me, the convention's a lot of fun. It's a lot of this. It's a lot of that. But it's the after party that I always seem to get the most memories out of. Like the first 2-day convention, I remember at the after party, I was sitting at a table with the guys from Capital City and Dennis Kitchen. And they were talking about comic book distribution from like the 60s onward. And I just sat there as, you know, like you're at the feet of Aristotle, just drinking in the knowledge. This year at the after party, you know, I didn't play poker because I was smart enough to know, hey, you don't go into the poker room unless you've got a lot of money because bad things happen in the poker room. Just ask Frank Cho.
You mean unlimited guts with wild cards?
Well, this year again, it was in-between. Cost people a lot of money. But I stayed down and, you know, was chatting with the people there and having a lot of fun. And about 10:30, people started to leave because the free drinks were gone. But Jim Shooter was at one table. And there were a few other people around. And it kind of became those of us who were left in the room were sitting with Jim Shooter. And he told stories until about 3:30 in the morning. And he told all kinds of stories. And no, I'm not going to go into them because I don't feel that'd be right. You know, he's sitting after hours. He's had a few glasses of wine, a few big glasses of wine.
He's a big guy.
Yeah. And he's telling stories. But I said this on my Facebook page. I'm going to say it on this podcast. I take back everything bad I've ever said about Jim Shooter ever. I was wrong about my assumptions of him because I based it on what I'd heard from other creators and the fact that, you know, oh, well, when he came into Marvel, he destroyed all the series I liked, and a lot of the artists I liked, you know, he fired them, and a lot of the writers he liked, he fired them. After sitting and listening to him and asking questions and hearing about his life, he's a guy who's been in horrible positions where he's had to make bad, you know, no matter what the choice is, it's a bad one. And he always goes out of his way to try and do it to cause the least amount of financial pain to the creators. And as someone who's been a supervisor before and been in a position where you've got to let people go, I can understand why people have said bad things about him. But this is a guy, I admire him. I think he's always trying to do his best. And even though I still am not a fan of his writing, as a person, I think he's a great guy. And I hope that his new line at Dark Horse is nothing but successful. The guy deserves a break. The guy deserves a hit. So the fact that I got to sit there and listen to him talk comic book history for 5.5 hours, that's why I go to these conventions.
And
I also
know sometime down the road, the way your mind works is we're going to hear some of that. As the topics are breached, you know, because you may not just sit down, okay, here's what he said, blah, 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 but, you know, these are things, you don't forget nothing comic book related.
Not really, no.
Every trial, every demon, every issue. Ah, sorry.
Well, here's the other thing that I really liked. I didn't get a chance to talk to Pat Broderick much, but I brought my Essential Man Thing #1, and I brought it over to be autographed. and I'd found the pages that he'd drawn, and it was he'd done spot illustrations for a tech story that Steve Gerber wrote. And those of you who've been listening to the podcast know I'm a huge Steve Gerber fan. I think he's one of the five best writers, not just in comics, but overall. So I'm bringing this book up, and there is another fan there, and we're talking about, you know, Man-Thing and Steve Gerber and everything. And Broderick's, you know, doing, finishing up sketches and doing autographs. And when I get to him, I say, I'd really like it if you autographed this, because big fan of yours, a big fan of Man-Thing, and a big fan of Steve Gerber. And he looks at it. Then he takes the book, and he looks at the cover, and he flips through it, and he looks at me, and he says, this is the first thing I ever did for Marvel. I had no idea that they had ever reprinted this. So when he autographed it, he just put, wow.
You showed me that. That was pretty cool. I think that rates right up there when you had Dave Sim do an autograph in one of the books when he was at Dreamhaven. I think that was the one with the Pope.
Yes, I showed him my, I said, as a single father, this is my favorite page. And what it is, it's a part of the story where this woman is going, bless my baby, while he's trying to give a speech. And, you know, every other panel, she's, bless my baby. And finally, he picks up the baby, and he says, bless you, and then throws the baby. and he says, Cerebus has taught you a lesson. You can get what you want and still not be happy. So when he signed it, and I showed him that page, he actually drew in the rest with a sound effect saying splat and all this other stuff.
That's great. I think for my favorite moments, this isn't one of my favorites, but I did get a chance to talk to Jim Shooter. I pulled out, of all things, my Marvel Fumetti book. And he looked at it, and you could see his eyes light up, because he was like, wow. You know, people are bringing up stuff to him that he hasn't probably thought of in years. And I had him autograph the page where Stan Lee's in there, and he's busy yelling at everybody about all the changes that they're doing in Marvel at the time. And they're like, what's going on? I don't like what I see. This is Stan Lee yelling, alcoholic Iron Man, dead vampires, Beta Ray, what's its name? And that caused Jim to chuckle as he's reading that. Knock it off already. I have spoken. And everybody behind him goes, nah. And I said, that's how it was at my comic store. I would say something, all my employees would go, nah.
Well, I wouldn't say nah. There was one time where you got into a fight with Christy and little Mike.
Was he at the con?
I didn't see either of them.
Okay.
I haven't seen sidebar. Christy since 2005. And I've heard that she thinks everybody hates her. Christy, yeah. If you're listening, we don't hate you. We miss you. Come back to the convention.
Yes. Anyways.
Anyway, you got into it with them because you came in after having a day off, and they had rearranged all the graphic novels into company?
No, it was the new comics.
Well, and the graphic novels, too.
Oh, okay.
Because they changed the comics back, but when I came in, they still hadn't changed the graphic novels back, and you were still in cray mode about it.
They were crayed. I remember that. You know, sometimes you guys got to pretend that I'm the boss. But I did, when I talked to Jim Shooter, I had my note card, because I have a series of things to thank you for. I said, thank you for what you did at Marvel. And he kind of, you know, he was kind of humble about it. I said, because that was my golden age of comics. I had Secret Wars, you're running Avengers. I mean, I had first started in comics, and I was just mesmerized, you know. I said, second, thank you for Valiant. I said, I opened my comic book store, and I'm pretty sure I paid month's rent with just Valiant sales. Not to mention, Pat and I brought in a full run of the stuff all the way back to Magnus One and Solar One, and I mean, I'm pretty sure that's how we got through the first, well, between that and the death of Superman, the rise of Image, it was an awesome year to open a comic book store in 1993. I told him, thank you for taking me gambling in East St. Louis. He kind of laughed at that. Backstory, when Defiant started out at the retailer show they had in St. Louis, they took everybody across the river onto St. Louis, and they had they apparently have a riverboat docked there, and of course all the proceeds go to St. Louis, East St. Louis. And because it was high water, I think flooding was going on at the time, they couldn't actually float it. But when you go on the boat, you stay there. If you go off the boat, you don't get to go back on because they treat it as if it's floating. You know, obviously you're just not going to, well, maybe you might jump off depending on the winnings you lost. So, and then I also asked him a question. Years ago during the Hot Comics years, we found a back of a Rob Liefeld comic that said, Shooter, Liefeld, Youngblood.
And I think, 1994.
Yes. And as we all know, there was no Shooter, no Liefeld, Youngblood in 1994.
Or in 2004.
And probably not in 2014. But I asked him about that, and he kind of chuckled, and he said, I want you to know, he likes Rob Liefeld. He thinks Rob is a tremendous promoter, and he's really good. So Rob had called up and basically wanted to do a crossover and some type of something. And he started promoting it, but he said he never heard back from them, and nothing ever happened. But, you know, meanwhile, he put it on the back of his comic that something was going on. You know, he has nothing bad to say about Rob. He just says sometimes he's just too excited to get things promoted, not realizing it's better to have things finished before you promote them. And that's my paraphrasing. So don't go to Shooter and say, hey, I heard blah, blah, blah. But he did say something that he said one time Rob called up and said, hey, Jim, I just trademarked a character called Defiant. Jim's like, oh, come on, Rob. But Jim was a fun guest, and I hope somebody got to – I think he did one or two panels, and if someone got to record them, I'd like to see a copy because, you know, again, Corey and I were running the charity booth, so we really didn't get a chance to break away. I did get one more autograph in my Marvel Fumetti book. I was able to get Ron Wilson, who at the time of the Marvel Fumetti book, I believe was doing the Super Boxers.
Yep.
So – and he was fighting Dave Cockrum. And he looked at that, and he was like, oh, God, look how young I was. And he looked at his wife, look, honey, look how thin I am. So that was great. Jim told me about the Fumetti book, and he said they had this all set up, and they sent it to the printer, and the printer had never done anything like this before. And when it came back, they were all kind of disappointed with the way it came off. And you can tell, if you've ever seen the Marvel Fumetti book, is that it's printed on standard comic paper, and the photographs are black and white, and they just don't show up that well. You can kind of look at the difference in the first page, where the first page is on the glossy cover, and then the next page, you can see it's already starting to fuzz over. I mean, if they didn't actually put names on there, you wouldn't have figured out that who it is, you know. So, but anyways, I got that signed, and if I run across anybody else in the future, I think I'm going to pull this sucker out and just have them sign it. That was a lot of fun.
One thing I want to point out, I do have a short story about the Marvel Fumetti book.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the stories in there were written by Mike Carlin, who's now an editor over at DC, but back then he was an assistant editor at Marvel, and he wrote a lot of stuff for Crazy Magazine. Not Crazy Magazine, but Crazy Magazine, which was Marvel's Mad ripoff.
Mm-hmm. When if you ever get a chance to find the Mork and Mindy parodies they do, hilarious. But I digress. Sorry, Peter David.
So when I friended him on Facebook, you know, you can send a little message, and I said, just want to let you know, I've read a lot of your writing back in, you know, Crazy and this and that, and while I like you as an editor, I miss you as a writer. And when he accepted my friend request, he sent back a note that said, you bought a lot of my writing. I think I owe you a lot of money.
I remember walking with Mike Carlin at one of the Chicago cons, and we were talking about characters to bring up, and we said Beator. And he went, who? He's in Hitman. We want a Beator figure. I'm Beator. And, you know, he looked at me like, that's crazy. And then Butcher's on the other side. Yeah, that'd be a great figure. And he kind of agreed. There was a, I also remember at one of the panels, they were talking about that. And what was the name of the in Preacher, the gunman that couldn't be killed, that came out.
Oh, the Saint of Killers.
That's when Nick yelled out, we want the Saint of Killers! He said, that ain't going to happen. They did make a Saint of Killer. So that was fun. I'm going to make one more memory
okay.
this time that I really enjoyed, and I'm going to give kudos out again to our friend, Terrence Greep, because he spent literally 2 hours talking to my 10-year-old daughter and my nephew about wrestling. He didn't have to, but he just sat and talked with them, and the kids were just happy to talk with someone that treated them respectfully. And I thank Terrence for that. He also, years ago at another comic show, I think Dana might have been 6 or 7, I was doing the show and she was with me. Terrence was next to us as the guest for the show, and he talked with Dana the entire convention and loved it. And him and Dana always at the con connect. And I will mention this, that both Dana, my 16-year-old daughter, and Terrence agreed there were more hot guys at this con than they've ever seen at any other con.
Well, we're running near the end, so one of the things I wanted to bring up, because I've promised it a few times, you and I went to San Diego in 2001.
Yes, before 9/11.
It was July 2001. Now, there are a whole bunch of stories we have from this,
mm-hmm.
but I just want to hit on two before we close. And the first is when I went to pick you up at the airport.
Oh, you're going to make me do that. All right. Basically, what the deal was is Corey flown out before me because you were meeting up with someone. And I came out afterwards. This is one of the few times I think I've flown. Obviously, with my job now, I fly almost constantly. But so I'm headed out to San Diego. At this time, again, this was pre-9/11, pre-TSA, you could actually go through security and go to the gate to meet people. So I figured I'd meet Corey at the gate. I came off the plane, and I'm looking around. And the first thing I spot is a really good-looking redhead with tight cleavage and fairly large, well, cleavage. And I keep thinking, boy, it would be nice if she was here for me. But I passed her, and I looked for Corey, who, of course, was nowhere near the gate. As I wandered, I figured, well, okay, he's probably running late. So I walked a little bit, and I thought, well, this isn't right. I better walk back. As I'm walking back, I see down one of the corridors, there's Corey walking with the same redhead. And I thought, it figures he'd be the one to spot her right away. And eventually I figured, by the time I got to the corridor where I saw you and the redhead, you guys were gone. And so I thought, okay, I'm just going to sit here, and eventually they're going to have to pass me. And sure enough, you guys came back and passed me. And then we caught up. And if I had to notice closer, I would have noticed written across said cleavage was, hello, Joe. I did not notice that.
See, you got it back when I got there. She was just holding a sign. You know how they have the signs you hold at the airport you know, Smith, Party of Three, and Bob Jones. Hers said, lousy rat bastard.
She wasn't holding it when I walked past her.
No. This was when I went.
Oh, when you
I was picked up. She was holding a sign.
Lousy rat bastard.
Lousy rat bastard. Now, at the con, there was one day she went in costume, wearing a chainmail outfit.
Oh, hey now.
Well, it sounds great, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Looks sexy, doesn't it?
Yes.
After we'd been walking around the con for about an hour and a half, and then we went to the gaming room, and I got back into gaming. I hadn't gamed since I moved to Minnesota because I didn't know anybody to game with. But I went there and I started gaming. And as we're walking to go get something to eat, she says, I don't think I can walk anymore. Are you tired? No. I'm in a lot of pain.
Oh.
So I pick her up, carry her to the first aid station where, you know, they've got a pretty elaborate first aid station at the convention there because, you know, 150,000 people, you're going to need first aid. And she goes back, and I just sit down, start reading comics, and about a half hour later, she comes out, and she's pretty much all wrapped in gauze.
Hmm.
And she takes the chainmail and drops it on the ground in front of me. Shoom! She looks at me and says, chafing.
Chafing.
So she's walking like she's Imhotep from the Mummy movies. I take this chainmail and put it in my backpack, and it weighs way too damn much. So I'm carrying around the chainmail while she's, you know, we go back to the gaming room where she pretty much stays the rest of the day because walking hurts. Mm. But we've got all kinds of stories from San Diego. Oh, matter of fact, if I remember right, San Diego is when you first told me that you were going to sell the shop.
Yep.
We're talking about how you weren't having fun.
And it just was, it was almost time to go. And of course, the problem with being self-employed and owning your own business is you have to fire yourself. And there's a couple ways to do that. You can either go out of business, go bankrupt, or sell the shop. And I was lucky enough where I was able to get a hold of the guy I bought the shop from, and he was looking to expand. He had one store, he had one franchise, a previous franchise had gone under, and he was looking to do another one. And I contacted him and said, here's the deal. I want to sell the store. I just want to sell you the intangible assets, the name, the customer base. And I want to keep as much product because I'm just going to do eBay. And we had it all planned out. Things were going good. And then 9/11 happened and basically just delayed it till November. And that's what happened. Eventually, I filled up a storage area with toys and statues. And I did have one guy come in and buy all my back issue comic books. That was about 230 long boxes of comics.
Yes.
And you guys helped me, I remember, just clearing out the back room and putting that stuff out so people could dig through it. We did a massive liquidation sale because basically Brian had his own stuff to bring in. He ended up buying stuff for me. We eventually just closed out everything, and he took over I think December 2001.
Yep.
And almost made it 10 years. And then, of course, I opened Crazy Comics. And, of course, to make the – you'll know more on this than I will. But basically, Brian sold it to Christy. And then Christy closed it. And then I opened up – I forget where we were. You and I were somewhere. And I was looking at the idea of opening another store. But I didn't want to open it because I didn't want to – take it away from Christy.
and do you remember exactly what I told you?
Well, I was telling you this whole thing. I said, I know what it's like. There was a time where I thought I was going to lose the shop, and this was midway through my shop, and I thought, this is, not the only thing I got. I mean, I have family, I have my wife, I have life outside of the comics. I thought, I'm not going to jump in and just take it away. I had guys leave my store, subscribers, try to open up their own store nearby. They would take people away, and when they closed, ironically, I'd come and I'd buy their stock up, but then a lot of these guys never came back. They just stopped buying comics. And I thought, I'm not going to do that to Christy because I know how that's going through. I know she was going through some tough times. I said, I'm just going to, forget about the idea. To which you said,
I don't think you're going to have to worry about Christy's shop in a couple of weeks.
Really?
Well, once again, you've wasted a precious hour of your life listening to us babble about funny books.
It was quite a babble session. We did I think we exceeded our babble ratio exponentially.
We always do.
Oh, yeah, and we've got more to babble on next week. But until then...
Until then, I just want to remind everyone that the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most.
Is that my heart? Oh, no, that's the music. Sorry.